6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. We broadcast in sedition, like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition.
Commandeering airways from to this edition of A Public Affair. This is John Quinlan. For the next hour, we have a fascinating discussion in store, and I think we'll have some sound here. There we go. As many of you know, the day before Thanksgiving was a day that marked a major change in local radio. Midwest Family Broadcasting announced that its station, WTDY, was going to go through a major format change. It appears now it's going to have all different call letters go to a network sports format. But this meant that it's a great loss for those of us who are listeners of local radio in terms of local news and talk content. In terms of a commercially run news show, it meant there's only one show in town now, WIBA. And in terms of access to local talk, among other things, it meant that John Sly Sylvester, who's been on the air now on various venues for almost 30 years, lost 35 years. Okay, Dylan, thanks. Lost an important venue. So major changes happening. We want to take this hour to first of all, thanks to some of the folks who are in the studio, I'll introduce in just a moment, pay a little homage, I think, to the efforts that were made at WTDY, some of the accomplishments that came down there over the years in terms of attention to local issues, especially in the wake of the Wisconsin uprising, so many things that were so important to folks. We also want to go back in time a little bit in terms of history, in terms of other efforts to preserve local news and progressive talk in the air. And so we're going to be talking about the situation that's happened over time with the mic. And then our big focus, I guess, is to look to the future and to see what is happening that might be positive, that can be reinforced. I think in many ways, folks are talking about potentially a coming full circle of radio rediscovering that local, as my guest on the phone will describe it, spoken word programming, talk and news, really is something that's the essential heritage of radio, and perhaps it holds out its greatest future. So with all that in mind, I'll probably have to do a little short shrift here, but we'll go around the table here and introduce our distinguished panel for today. Dylan Brogan is here. Dylan was a news reporter for WTDY. Hey, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, John.
And Dina Wright is here. She was a news anchor on the station. As a pastor's kid, I have to mention you in association with, of course, your father, the Reverend James Wright, local civil rights leader of enormous respect to here locally. Not to mention daughter of your mom, who had her birthday on Saturday.
Happy birthday. Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Dina has worked all across different major markets, including Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles, Detroit, and Denver, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of perspectives to bring.
But it's good to be back home.
Well, at least it was before
the day before Thanksgiving, though.
We'll jump right into that in a second. Amy Barilow is here. She was the news director on WTDY the past 2.5 years.
Well, I was there for the past 2.5 years. I was only news director for the past 9 months.
Okay.
So, and
a lot of your background for a decade or so was also in television news.
Right. This was my first radio job.
Okay.
Before that, it was TV.
And as I said, yeah, I think there will be some interesting juxtapositions in terms of, you know, those two scenes we can talk about.
A good introduction to the industry.
Yes.
That's right. We also have in studio from the activist side of the table, Mike Dickman is here. He was organizing a rally and other efforts, in this case, I think specifically focused with the hope of getting Sly on the air on the mic.
Thanks, as opposed to sit with this distinguished panel today. Thank you.
Good to have you here. And then Barbara Wright is here. Barbara, activist in many different realms, but many of you folks remember her in helping lead the efforts to keep the mic and its progressive talk format on the air, which was successful the first time that Clear Channel had changed its mind about such a thing. So, Barbara, welcome.
That's right. Well, thank you, John, for having me here, and I'm looking forward to hearing this discussion and participating in it, because what's happening on the radio, especially talk radio in Madison, a progressive city that's slowly losing their progressive venues, is important to me.
And lastly, I hope, Glenn Gardner, we have you on the phone?
I hope.
Okay, we do. Glenn, is it correct you were the former general manager of WTDY?
I was a station manager at WPDY, and also for Midwest Family, I was a general manager and sat on the board of directors for, I think, all their markets. So I do have some inside knowledge.
Just a little bit.
And started the legendary WJJO.
So there you go. There you go. I know this is going to be a mutual admiration society throughout, so we'll just establish that right now. But and Glenn, what's the best way to describe where you are and what you're doing now?
Well, I'm in suburban Boston, which is home for me. And what I do is consult other media and other businesses on marketing, best venues for marketing, and kind of how to market and in some cases sell in this new landscape, in this new environment.
All right. Well, we've introduced everybody properly here. We want to invite you into our conversation, 608-256-2001. And I think basically a good place to start, though, I think, perhaps is with Glenn. There's been a lot of activity in the social media talking about this, trying to make some sense of it. And you had written some pieces that intern Tim Morrissey, your former colleague, had placed in a blog posting. I think essentially what you were arguing in many ways is, whether we're talking very generally or maybe very specifically about what happened at WTDY, there's been a shift in philosophy over the years. There used to be this programmatic focus, focus on accountability, connection to local community, and how that could help build an audience, build a station. And over the time, perhaps that's shifted more in towards of a sales-oriented direction. Sales is an important part of things, but if it becomes the only priority, then something's really askew. Could you elaborate kind of on the points you were trying to make in that essay?
Yeah, sure, John. I think there are two basic kinds of radio operations, and maybe media operations generally. And I think one of the things we kind of need to talk about in this day and age, too, is what we're really talking about is audio programming. I even think the term radio, to some extent, might not be proper anymore because the consumer can get audio programming lots of different ways now, and I guess maybe that's one of the issues too. But whether it's on the internet or whether it's coming out of a traditional radio station, the product is still the programming, and it takes people to make the product. And I think you get into a no-win situation when you cut people, because then you cut product, and then you have less to sell, so you have to cut more people, and then you have less product, and they have less to sell. So I think there's a kind of shooting yourself in the foot aspect to what tends to happen in sales-driven organizations, and I kind of think that's what that company's become to some extent. Everything is focused towards how to best maximize the amount of profit, which in a commercial operation, obviously, there's nothing wrong with it, but I think there's two different ways to do it. One is by focusing on the product. And in this day and age, too, when you think about what most commercial radio is music-based. And therein lies part of the issue, too, in that I think most consumers now don't really need radio for that. I've got 60 gig of every song that I ever wanted and probably about 30 gig of music that I don't even know why I have, on my phone. So, if I want to program music, I can program it. The only time that I would really use radio for that is either to be exposed to new material or if you view, and I think WRT probably does a pretty good job of this, if you view the air personality as talent, quote-unquote, how they mix and how they put the music together is kind of like an artist, I think, painting on a canvas. And that's where the art of being a quote-unquote disc jockey, I think, comes in. But most of them can't practice that art anymore because, through consolidation, either the music isn't being produced that way or a playlist is just being shoved down someone's throat and that person is just basically sitting there to facilitate what the computer tells them to play next.
That's true when it comes to the music, and I certainly agree with you to a certain degree, but having worked in major market radio for 20 years doing music, what's important in terms of being a personality, and not a lot of radio stations, especially when you're looking at middle to small markets, don't look for personalities. They just look for, like you say, a DJ or a jock. So what becomes important then, if you're playing the same music as the person across the street, the station across the street, is your presentation of that music. So certainly you can't choose your music, but you can choose the things that you say in between the music. And that's where I think in major market, that's why we still have local radio personalities, because your conversation is compelling. You know, you are being relatable to your audience, and, you know, hence major market radio personalities who are local to that community.
Nice to hear your voice, Dean, and I agree. And actually, Dean and I go way back.
Yeah, I was telling him way, way back. Wisdom.
to a company that's way no longer in existence called Mid-Continent Broadcasting. But that's another story for another day.
But hello there. And
I would agree with you there. You know, what I tell the stations I work with now is what is between the songs is actually what's more critical now if you're a music station. If you're a spoken word station, obviously, you've got the advantage of the program being fresh and different every day, which is, I think, really the future of a lot of audio programming is in some form of talk. And, you know, talk, even from a sales standpoint, is a very compelling format, because if you think of the way people just use the appliance, people listen to talk radio differently than they listen to music radio. Music radio can, in effect, be background, but the whole notion of talk being background is kind of foolish, because you have to listen to it. The whole idea of having it on. I've walked into businesses and I've talked to business owners, and I've literally seen them staring at the radio while they're listening to a talk show. you know, it's kind of that level of compelling, and to have a client's message in that medium obviously is a lot more effective than a background medium. You can run fewer commercials, spend less money, and get much more impact.
Well, I think that's
the value of, you know, on the sales side of that kind of program.
Let me bring something into the mix, I think, that's resonant with what you're talking about, but it's the relationship that forms between local hosts, reporters, other folks on the radio, and the audience.
And the sales department. I mean, let's go back to what Glenn was saying, because it's so important to have a partnership between sales and programming.
Yeah.
And if that's not there...
Well, and I want to give you in just a second just to kind of reflect more generally on some of the things that really have worked that you've seen, and perhaps, you know, things that don't work. But when I talk about relationship, going back to the experience with the mic of several years ago, a lot of the reason that fans came out, a lot of the reasons now that fans are coming out in support of Sly, is because there was a visible presence in the community. There was outreach. There was a sense of connecting people beyond the scope of the program. But you know, I know some of what you've written, Dina, you've seen that lacking sometimes in the local radio of today.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, music or now news talk, that you develop relationships with your audience. Having that relatability. If they think you're their friend, they will listen. And, you know, and in terms of that, you also have to build your cum. And by cum, I mean numbers of people that listen. If you're not building a cum, your station isn't going to grow. You know, Madison is growing. Madison is getting more diverse. If you are not truly benefiting the listener, if there's no benefit to the listener, they won't come. They're not going to listen.
And actually, after that, I just want to go around the table so we get folks to at least have an initial word here. But I think this is, you know, a theme that's true of all of you in your different roles. I mean, Dylan, I think one of the folks, the reason why you were appreciated is folks had seen you at the Capitol Square. They'd seen you at different events, and they identified not just with you as a voice, but somebody who was there with things. And certainly that's true of Sly. So can you reflect on...
Well, and that's a little bit what's so difficult about what happened on the day before Thanksgiving is I thought we really were making strides in reaching out to a new community and a new audience. A lot had to do with what happened with all the political activity here in Madison that was just so overwhelming. And And having people like Lindsay Adjavor, who was our feature reporter, go out to communities and talk and make those real connections with people, saying, hey, I want to learn about your clog dancing class in yep. Mount Horeb, or those type of things, while they are a lot of effort, they go a long way in terms of really building an audience that is loyal. And I know, especially with Sly's program, I mean, things are so different than 2 years ago, just because his program became kind of like the behind-the-scenes look at what was going on in the political circles here in Madison and Wisconsin. And while there are some great reporting going on by, you know, reporters at the Wisconsin Radio Network or Wisconsin Public Radio, those are just the basics. You didn't, and as colorful as it could be, people really appreciated that because that was information they couldn't get anywhere else. And I think that really emphasizes what Glenn's saying. Why are people listening to the radio?
Well, talk about a meaningful relationship. I know you've described in your blog. You're 24 now, is that right?
25,
excuse me. You've been in the air for about 4 years?
I started working there in 2007, so a little less.
But anyway, as you talked about Sly and your Facebook page and other things, you talk about being a young person listening to the radio and what an inspiration that was.
I mean, it had a lot to do with my father's love of radio, and it was always on. And talk was, there was no music radio going on in my household. From a very young age, Sly was on the radio, sometimes to my mom saying, hey, you need to turn that down. It's just a 10-year-old. But the whole point was that I love that show, and I have loved that show for 15 years, and it kills me every day that it's not on in the morning. And I feel, and a lot of people have reached out to me saying that that regular part of their day, it's so beyond a radio show. It's a part of their routine. It's a part of everything. And that's gone, and that was there for so long. And I think what's really sad about the state of local radio is that we are slowly losing more and more and more, both on the music side and the talk side. Wart and the college radio station now are the main places where we have local talk.
Yeah.
And especially local talk where a community is really driving a lot of the content. And I don't see that with other commercial radio stations here in town.
So, Amber Barrillo, the newscast that you all did from 5 to 6 was really kind of an anomaly in today's radio. It's unusual to have that because you reflect on that. But I think the other thing, you know, given your background in TV, this may, again, be before you all were around, but there was an anchor named Mike McKinney who kind of epitomized that local connection that people had to the community service being out there and everything. Yeah, I mean, is that personal connection an important part of what you do, whether it's in TV or radio news?
You know, the radio thing was very different for me. I mean, to sit down and talk to somebody for 8 to 10 minutes about something that just doesn't happen in local TV, 6 o'clock news. You can't spend that kind of time talking about an issue. And so when I got the chance from 5 to 6 to sit there and say the news that I thought was important for an hour, and to team up with our newsroom and come up with stories and really take a look at what's happening in this community in a deep way. I don't know any other place that really does that every single day. And I don't think anybody at Midwest Family Broadcasting would say that the news that we did was inadequate or bad. I think they were all very proud of our newsroom.
They just gave up on even trying.
It's just so expensive and takes so much manpower that if you don't, like Dina said, spend every minute focused and promoting and really knowing what you're doing, you can't be successful.
Yeah.
Especially in news talk, because news talk is one of the most expensive types of radio. And it can be one of the most rewarding and beneficial in terms of its monetary value.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, the top billing radio station in the nation, number one in monetary money coming in the door, is a talk station. It's WTOP in Washington, D.C. It's the number one revenue station in the country right now. So the format is viable and can make money, but it takes a skill set to market, to sell it.
Yeah, absolutely.
To sell it to clients.
And it's from the top down, and it takes good management. Good program directors. People that kind of know the business. It takes a lot, but certainly, I think everybody in the newsroom, we all gave our best, gave our all, did the best job that we possibly could. And I certainly don't think that anyone, like you said, at Midwest Family would think otherwise.
I want to come back to that theme and figuring out what's going on, and more importantly, again, you know, what we can learn for the future. Just one thing, our news facilitator here is reminding me, in the interest of full disclosure, I should probably mention some of my background here. I was on the mic on a weekend show and then decided, Glenn was kind enough to invite me over to WTDY when that
I think I produced a few of your programs.
You did. I think you did. So hey, we're all kind of in this together, and we've seen some of these transitions together. Also, share that experience of being in the studio with the security guards.
Well, and
look at
how much things just changed in the in between. I mean, when Glenn was program director at WTDY, we had live program from 6 to 6 every day during the weekday.
Wow. Yeah.
And then we had so much more live content on the weekend that wasn't basically a paid infomercial.
And so, what happened?
Hey, Glenn, can you hold on that thought? I just want to make sure we get the rest of the panel into the conversation here first. Mike Dickman, one of the things that you obviously feel free to comment on any of this, but one of your motivations has been to get Sly back on the air. You had a rally this Saturday. What's been the progress? What's been the reaction of what you've heard? And if you could tilt the mic just a little bit more in your direction there.
Well, I had different reactions from different crowds about it, but I graduated in 1979, the same year as Sly. And so I've listened to his programming for years and years and years. And the interesting part is that we haven't always agreed on issues. But that's what the programming was. It provoked thought and conversation and participation from all. And so when you take that away from us, especially after the last 2 years that we've been battling, it makes us feel like, first of all, you're trying to silence us. And secondly, who do I go to? If I call, I won't even mention names. But if I call conservative radio and present a thought that I have about a discussion they're having, they won't put me on if it's not what they want. So canned radio is not for me. I mean, I like participation. I think a forum that's open to everyone is the best. And you just can't take that away. I mean, but it was a neat little rally. I wanted people that attended not to be bitter. We were thankful for the programming that we got there. And what we want is we want our voices and our personalities and the people that worked so very hard in Wisconsin to help us stay connected to what's going on. We want them back on the air, and we want them in Madison, and we're probably not going to quit till that happens.
It's early in the process, but have you heard anything from the mic about your request here?
No, they haven't called me.
Okay.
I know that over 9,000 people have signed an online petition to get Sly back on the air, and that there are a vast spectrum of people, including Mike, that are very... And I think Sly is just well-qualified for the position, but the broader message is we want a local morning progressive talk show, and we don't have that anymore.
In parallel to what we'll talk about in a second about where WTDY went, the mic itself, even though the format is essentially preserved, and she had progressive talk. It was a much more locally oriented station. We had Lee Rayburn in the morning. There's still Doug Cunningham does a bang up show at 5. Some good weekend programs. Too many mentioned right now, but there's been a change. And it's unfortunately been a backward slide for listeners. Just want to bring Barb in real quick. So reflect back 2007. The mic makes a similar announcement. What do you think was the impetus? Why did people, rather than just kind of rolling over and just considering this to be a done deal, decide that they wanted to do something about this?
Well, it was actually November 10th, 2006, that they decided that they were going to switch to a sports format. And I think a lot of the listeners of the mic were kind of new to talk radio. And it's an intimate format because it's usually just you in your car and people are giving you information that you desperately want and need. So you're listening with, not just half listening, but you're listening very intently. And so to lose that when people had just gotten used to that was a shock for a lot of people. And I know Val said that she was sick in bed. And she heard that announcement and decided, I have to do something about it. So she decided to do an online petition. And someone emailed it to me, and so I got involved. And going to talk to the radio station to try to understand the issues was sort of an exercise in frustration. They really weren't interested in what the listeners thought or wanted or anything. It was about all kinds of Arbitron ratings and advertisements and this and that. And so I actually learned a lot about radio that I never thought I would know, about how radio stations operate and about, what their financial interests are. But the priority of what listeners want is very low on their list of priorities. Mm-hmm. And so we put together a few things. We put together a rally at the High Noon Saloon. And people started piling in. It was probably one of the most successful things I've ever helped organize.
500-600 people standing room only outside.
Yes, and then the outside crowd parted, and all kinds of people who, Terry Kelly and various other people who were big in media came in. And, you know, the people came to speak, you know, all of the public officials. It was huge. And you could see that the energy that people were putting into this reflected the need that they had for talk radio.
Yeah. Glenn Gardner, I think it's useful to flash back here. And actually, first, let's flash way back. I remember one of the things that came out of the movement that Barbara's describing is a local gathering of progressive talk show hosts, folks like Tom Hartman and other folks from all around the country that had successful shows.
It was the day I died and went to heaven to think about all of those smart people in the same room.
They all came to the Darnell's restaurant, which Barbara was the owner of at the time. But you know, one of the presentations I remember best was someone who'd been a veteran of radio who was around in late 1960s Chicago radio. And was describing this diversity of the landscape there in terms of different opinions, not just right and left, but all across the spectrum. And in that, it was something that you know, not only listeners took great pride in, but it was something that drove the market. You know, it was very fundable and very supportable. You know, from the stations. What could you reflect back on that, and then maybe related to TDUI, and what's changed that's meant that kind of the soul of radio has kind of been pulled out of it, I guess, since then?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. I think one was the Communications Act in the 90s, which cleared the way for massive consolidation in the radio business. It really used to be mandated by law, in effect, and this is oversimplifying it, but in effect, all radio was going to be local. Because you could only own so many radio stations, and it was very difficult to do it across markets. Once consolidation happened, I think it changed the financial landscape and changed the kind of the dynamics of the financial aspects of radio, and it was no longer a local medium for all intents and purposes. So, I think that was the big game-changing thing. And then when companies figured out kind of the financial aspects of consolidation and got into the business really of buying and selling radio stations as opposed to programming them and amassing radio stations, that's I think when everything changed.
And as you talk about current trends, you were mentioning again WTOP, most popular radio station in the country right now, and how it's embracing the spoken word trend. Is it possible that we might be able to come full circle, that you know, even just without regulation, that from a corporate standpoint, it just makes sense that good radio is local radio?
Yeah, I think there's something to that, John. Simple reason, too, of the way the whole entertainment landscape is changing now and how entertainment is delivered. What drove a lot of that is actually, I call the price of storage. If you look at what it costs to store music, any individual, you can get a terabyte now for, what, $50 or something like that. It's a massive amount of storage, any song you've ever wanted. So music, again, as Dina was referring to, becomes less important. Someone still has to tell me every morning, basically, or I have to seek that information out myself as to, you know, are the kids going to need a raincoat on the way home? Is it going to snow? Is the belt line all clogged up? All those, you can call them survival, survival elements that we all kind of need to get through our day. There's an aspect of local radio, I think, that's very good at doing those things, but it takes people. One of the things that kind of had me scratching my head is even on a music station, and I know that the newsroom at WTDY did a fantastic job of supplying those other, and I can't remember how many stations, 7 or 8 music stations in the building with information when something happened. Mm-hmm. And, there's also a legal obligation, by the way, that stations have in order to maintain their licenses that they're supposed mm-hmm. to be broadcasting in the public interest, and that's a very, mm-hmm. Wide, hard-to-define term. But I think the intent of the law was very clear in that, if you've got a situation that the public needs to know about, in effect, you have a duty I think as a broadcaster that's holding a license for the people. You know, the people own those airwaves, so the stations don't. So there's that aspect as well, and I wonder when a whole news department, in effect, gets let go, how they intend or how anyone would intend to fulfill that obligation via the FCC to the people.
There was this classic case up in Fargo a few years ago, I think a chemical spillage off of a rail car that threatened the community, and Clear Channel owned, I think, all seven stations in the area. And there was no one local to call, no one to bring onto the air, to rally the community together. Glenn, can, and perhaps the rest of you, too, can just comment, you know, when there's been a tornado or a flood or other things, how has it been important for a local radio station to be there as a resource for folks?
I mean, I think it's been supremely important because radio is in effect, the most immediate medium that there is. You know, there's very little setup involved. You can be on the air with a cell phone. You don't need a satellite truck. And I can think of numerous situations, you know, that when I was actually on the air, you know, Tim and I were on the air during horrendous snowstorms. People needed to know what's open, what's closed. There was a situation, you guys probably remember this, I think it was out on the interstate when people were stuck out there for like 2 days or something. It was this massive storm, and they couldn't get people off the roads. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of situations like that, but there's another... There's another thing that good local broadcasting does, too, and you know, there were times, you know, managing Sly, believe me, when I wanted to pull the hairs out of my head.
No.
But there were other times, too, when Sly knew that management, me, other management there had his back. I'll never forget the time that Sue Bauman, when she was mayor, in effect tried to do something that was, you know, patently, at least certainly bordered on illegal as far as limiting access to information. And
to a public building.
We decided to go, you know, get a First Amendment attorney and fight that fight. If there's no slide, if there's no news department, if there's no James Friedman that's being hired by some media to fight that First Amendment fight, it doesn't get fought. It doesn't happen. You know, it gets brushed under the carpet or nobody even knows about it. So, I mean, that's another whole aspect of what's going on here that I think people need to really think about. It's not just Sly's, you know, 3 or 4 hours on the air or what happened to Dina or what happened to me or what happened to Amy or anybody dealing there. It's really, these are important things. If that hadn't happened and if we hadn't had his back and decided to fight that fight and go toe-to-toe, you know, with City Hall, it never would have happened.
Yeah, if you can hold for just a second, we've got some callers being talk radio. We need to do honor to those folks. And for those of you joining us mid-course, this is a public affair. I'm your host, John Quinlan, and we're talking about the future of local talk and news and radio. Again, we're very privileged to have a distinguished panel, three alumni from, four from WTDY, Amy.
It's Barrio.
Barrio, excuse me. And Dina Wright, Dylan Brogan, Glenn Gardner on the phone. Also, local activist Barbara Wright and Mike Dickman. Again, well, we appreciate your call. Just a second. I think, Dina, you were just about
to say
something.
No, I was just going to just kind of comment on the fact that the newsroom is no longer there and not and offering that kind of information that certainly listeners want. Probably what they will do is, you know, their number one station is Magic, and there's a person on Magic that does, you know, give news, and I'm sure that he'll provide that to the other folks. What's happened, I think, with WTDY that, and not really sure who to put blame or fault on, but the station was not really in a position to be the station that folks turn to immediately to get that kind of information, to turn to in the morning to say, oh, do our kids go to school? Turn to see, you know, what the weather's going to be like. Turn to find out what the traffic's going to be like. So, you know, I think had that been the case, then maybe there would be a bigger argument here. You know, unfortunately, WTDY was not the station that people turned to every morning to get that kind of information.
I know this is both a general concern and maybe some specific to your experience there, but you as a radio professional have you know.
Well, I would certainly disagree.
Sure.
To
okay, yeah, okay, no, I'm sorry, and we'll give you a second. But what is a successful way of reaching out to the community, serving folks effectively?
Well, and again, I go back to this whole thing about building listenership. You know, we had great programming. There's no denying that. We had a great newsroom. Sly delivered great content in his morning program. But if no one's listening, and I don't mean no one as in zero, but if the numbers aren't there, you're talking to the same 25 people that you're talking to each and every morning. Yeah. So you're not really building your cum. You're not building out into the community. There's no one else is listening, and that's what needs to happen. I mean, we all talk about Arbitron ratings, and oh my gosh, it's awful how they do it. And you know, now in major market where I was working, it was all about PPM, which I feel is a better way. You know, people are actually having the personal meters on them, and you kind of find out what music or what radio programming people are exposed to. But here, unfortunately, the way it's done is Arbitron. If the ratings ain't good, it ain't gonna sell. And I think that's part of what's happened in the demise of WTDY and local radio across the country.
Briefly explain the term cum and what you're talking about.
Cum is just numbers of people that are listening at any given time. Yeah. You know, we have what's called here average quarter hour. So it's every 15 minutes. And what we need to do in terms of programming is to program so that we are kind of promoting what's coming up in the next 15 minutes. You want to keep people listening.
Dylan, if you hold your thought for just a second.
And you want to recycle listeners. If folks are listening to Sly, and certainly they were, you know, and you know, this is an indication, all the folks that are coming out to try to get Sly back on a mic somewhere. You know, if they're listening to Sly, then by golly, they have to continue to listen to the next program and the next program. And finally, at the end of the day, listening to Amy, which is, you know, wonderful content. But if no one's listening, you know, Lindsay Edgeworth did a great job with her personal interest stories. I mean, she really stepped up to the plate. But if no one's listening, it's sad. It's hard for us because we're doing the best job that we can possibly do. But if you're not provided with the necessary tools, you ultimately end up failing, and failing Madisonians. That's what we want. We want local radio.
Please hold on just a second. I think we may have actually several calls waiting, so let's get to our next one. I think we're continuing to try. Dylan, I'll give you a chance to get a little different opinion here.
Well, I don't know. I think it just speaks to the whole radio industry and the consolidation where these rating companies and everything are the ones driving all the sales, the one driving the future of all these things.
I agree.
It's a corrupt situation where the operation manager at WTY once told me a story about he was at a radio conference where the Arbitron actually kept sending people meters to this woman who turns out was just taping them to a fan and just had a radio on, because you get paid to do this.
Oh, no.
And so this little station in Texas somehow ended up being one of the most successful radio stations in the country because this woman kept being sent people meters that were spinning around in a fan. That's how they keep them active. So, I mean, when you have the whole thing sort of where the destiny of a station is pre-written and the big advertisers dominate everything. Because when you look at, and you're right, Dina's absolutely right, there need to be efforts to reach out to local audiences as much as possible that every radio station needs to continually work at and continually get better at. And those things could have obviously been a lot better.
And we were not reaching out to the diverse...
But to say that nobody was listening, I just highly disagree.
Madison has become, but I don't mean that literally, of course.
The head of Wisconsin,
this argument at work too.
Many times. But the head of Wisconsin Manufacturer and Commerce this weekend said he listened to Sly every day. I know the mayor listened every day, and then we have to deny that there was an audience maybe we obviously needed to expand beyond just sort of Sly's popularity. But I just think that you're right. It has to do with marketing, but ultimately the forces that are driving this, what works in radio and what aren't, are not invested in providing good local content, period.
It sounds like you're more on the same page.
Maybe
completely.
Pages, completely.
If I could put something...
Let me try. I'm sorry. We just want to try. I don't know what's happening with your college. Martine, do we have our caller ready? Your comment or question, please. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Sorry for difficulty getting on the air. What's your comment or question, please?
Well, can I... Get it on the air?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Oh, okay. Hello?
You are on the air. Go ahead.
I'm listening. Oh, okay, yeah. I'm on the air. Okay.
Yeah, you need to turn your radio down if it's in the
Pardon
background.
Pardon me. I'm clunked. My name is Griffin. I'll be 80 years old in May.
Yeah.
June. Pardon me. Next year. Anyway, I got a book called Dictionary of Media and Communication Studies. I'm going to read just one part.
It's got to be very brief, sir. We got a line of callers, so if it's very brief, go ahead.
Yeah. Radio Death, the hate radio nicknamed by the Rwanda Radio Television Thousand Hills television radio, which, following the assassination of President so-and-so, conducted an intensive campaign of hatred against the minority tribe, the Tutsis, 9% of the population. That's against 90% of the Hutu. The radio proved to be a power of radio in the land without television and an illiteracy rate of 50%. A broadcast in April 1994 claimed that by the 5th of May, the elimination of the Tutsi would be finished. In the first week, killing spree, upwards of 200,000 people were murdered as the Hutu militia combed the network. What I'm recommending is that Wart get this book and put it in the reception room.
And we'll definitely do that. I apologize, cut you off here, but
that's a good one.
We've got such a full panel and everything. Any comments on that?
WTUI never promoted genocide on the air.
But it's true. That's how powerful talk radio can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be used for either a good thing, to teaching people civics and having them understand current events, or it can be used for bad.
And I believe we have another caller on the line. Is that right, Martine? Caller, your comment or question, please.
Oh, hi. Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I don't know. I came up with this idea. Maybe there's got to be a parallel universe with this. But what about cooperative radio, or the idea like Doug at 5 o'clock on the mic does, where each program on the network in each time slot is paid for by that person raising money and capital for their individual program. And then so anything above that, you know, raised for covering the costs and everything, then that person can turn around and sell merchandise and podcasts and best ofs and do shows on the road and all that kind of thing to supplement their own income. And that way the program director doesn't really have to worry about paying the staff and the cume and all that nonsense.
Thanks. We'll put it past the pros here. Actually, Glenn Gardner, any responses to that kind of radio?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an interesting model there. You know, you mentioned Doug Cunningham. We had done it on TUI years and years ago with a few different shows, Boo and Petey, you know, two women who walked in the studio, it's got to be 15 years ago now, and said, we really think we need to be on the radio. And I'm like, well, let's figure out how to do that. And that's how we figured out how to do that. There's also a news model. It's online, and I wish I could remember the name of the site right now. But if you're an enterprising reporter, you post the story idea that you have, and there's a funding mechanism whereby people can donate to get that particular story produced. And so there are these all kinds of new funding mechanisms out there, and I think there's something to be said for that, you know, more cooperative view. It's just when you think about radio, though, there's 24/7. That's a lot of programming.
Yeah.
You know, hence the expense and where that comes in. And just one point, too, to what Dina was saying and what Dylan was saying. You know, a lot of what I do now in my consulting role is I teach sales departments how to sell not based on ratings, because in my view, ratings are an artificial universe. You know, when Barb was running a restaurant down there, if you think about how many tables she had in there, and I'm going to guess it might have been, I don't know,
25
or something like that. I remember it being a relatively small place. That's really all she needs. She doesn't need 10,000 people, and she doesn't need a tremendous amount of tune, but she needs the right people. And if you really think about how I think local radio is best sold, and it tends not to be sold this way anymore because of consolidation. If I'm a salesperson, I'm in charge of selling 6 radio stations in one market, I cannot stop down to worry a whole ton about 4 hours of slideshow without worrying also about 24/7 on 7 other radio stations being monetized.
What's easier to have prepackaged sales departments can do is
actually talk to the needs of the community as opposed to selling large blocks of commercial time across many, 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 many radio stations.
You know, that's very true, because what's happened a lot of times to the progressive stations is they've been yanked off the air because supposedly they're not bringing enough revenue or having high enough Arbitron ratings to be replaced with sports radio that gets a tiny percentage of the listenership. So you have to tell yourself it's not about the amount of people that are listening. It's about somebody paying big bucks up front to have that you know, show that only has a small amount of listenership.
It just sounds like you're talking about narrowcasting, also loyalty of audience and other factors that are better than just aggregate numbers. But Amy, did you have something you want to add?
You know, I worked in for a TV station long ago that was the distant number two in a two-station market. Every time the ratings book, it was Nielsen, not Arbitron, would come out, distant number two. And TV stations pay a lot of money to learn that they are the distant number two every single time. And so we got a new GM, and he came in and said, we're not doing it anymore. We don't care about the ratings. My sales team is going to sell this station based on what this station has and what it does for the community. And he was very successful. I mean, that station has a lot of money, never pays a nickel to Nielsen, and you know, I think that's rare. We spend so, TV and radio spend so much time worrying about sweeps and worrying about numbers. It doesn't have to be that way. You can think out of the box, and you can sell based on the merit of your programming and nothing else.
Yeah,
And
that's a great point, Amy. And if you kind of think about how the world really works, some of this is just such common sense, but people get so hung up sometimes on the numbers. Most media actually have many more people listening or watching than any business really needs. So it almost becomes academic. You know, if I'm Barb's Restaurant, or if I'm a Cadillac dealer, or if I'm a Prius dealer, and I need to sell 25 cars a month, there's really no direct correlation between how many people listen and results. I've never seen a study that can point to a direct correlation between the more people listen, the more a particular product will move off the shelf. What I have seen a correlation between is who listens and then what happens. So, you know, if I only have 50 people listening to my whatever, radio station, webcast, podcast, you know, eyes on my TV station, but all 25 of them go and buy a Prius, that Prius dealer is going to be very, very happy and could care less whether we're number 10 or number 1 or number 2 or number 3. I hope that kind of illustrates the two different ways to look at it. You know, the rating-based approach is an approach, I think, for a less talented sales force. You know, a more skilled sales force can take a station like WTDY and definitely figure out how to make a lot of money with it. We did.
Dina, go
so
ahead.
So the sales department, because I'll tell you, I couldn't name two salespeople right now. I don't know. As I mentioned at the beginning, there has to be, I believe, a partnership between sales and programming. And, yeah. You know, is the sales department properly trained? Because there's a difference in selling a news talk station, a difference between selling a news talk station whose numbers are in the toilet versus a music station who is like one of the top billers in the city.
Yeah, I think that was one of the disconnects with my programming on TDY, too, that we didn't make that connection so that we could have...
Well, and who cares about those huge... Yeah. Just cares about just this, the cume on a piece of paper. It's big advertisers. It's Walmart, it's Pepsi, it's all these big... It's like a financial loan industry. I mean, there's all these big advertisers that's what they want, and who gets left out? Local advertisers who now have limited options in terms of reaching an audience that they can help with their business. That's another big part of this whole thing with WTDY is that they've given up on local advertisers, too.
Absolutely. I'll come back to the activist side of the table in just a second, but we have another caller on the line. Caller, your comment or question, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, it's a disaster to this community. It slides shows off the air.
John, it is so good to hear your voice. Where did you go? Where did you go for so long? We've been wondering where you've been.
Yeah, here too, John. It's good to hear you. Go ahead.
Let me just finish. It's a personal loss to me. I always listen to the show for 3 hours. It's the one place Sly would take anybody, whether you liked him or not, you could call in and talk. And he covered the local news. All of this is gone. It was the one show that really counted for something in the morning. I didn't listen to WPR at all. I still don't. But the real question everybody wants to know is why. I listened to him about 3 weeks ago. He said his ratings were better now than they were a year ago. You know, Tom Hartman, Ed Schultz, Mike Malloy, my favorite, have all said they've been pushed out of the market for ideological reasons. And when I heard about this, I thought, oh man, this is vengeance for what happened in the November elections. And the fact that Sly has gotten progressively more progressive. I hope to God he reappears. I liked everybody on that show. Dylan was one of my favorites. Preble, everybody. I felt kind of lost in the morning anymore.
So do I, John. So, all right. So good to hear you.
We thought you were dead. We were so worried about you.
Good to hear from you, John. We're gonna, go ahead.
I just want to say you just nailed it. I mean, that's what, as listeners, and I want to point out that this is happening all over the country. It's Portland, Seattle, progressive stations with their strongest signals shut down. I take it personally. I won't be canceled. So we need to keep fighting and get the progressive radio established, and we need to start it here in Madison. And I'm lost without my morning radio. We're devastated by this. I'm not even lying when I say that most of us have wept over this. This is such a huge loss for us. We've struggled. We're fighting. We're working three jobs. We're trying to stay involved in Wisconsin, and that's what this is about. They just want to disconnect us.
Mike, for folks who want to join in your efforts, just so we make sure we get that on, what's a good way? Through Facebook or other means?
Facebook is very good. I mean, I'm not a guy that's put a lot of time in computers and stuff.
What's your page called? I forget. It's
It's M. Dickman, a.k.a. Pizza Box Guy, which right. I didn't develop, but
the site for Sly. Give Sly the mic.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. It was We Want Sly on 92.1 The Mic. Our message changed over that week because we were so angry we didn't know what we wanted to do, but we knew a bunch of us wanted to say something. And I thought that our message was perfect. We don't want to be bitter. We just want our voices back.
All right. We're down to our last few minutes. But Barbara, I know you had something you wanted to share.
Right. I just want to put out a perspective there for people to think about. One is that the owners of these radio stations, they don't own the airwaves. Supposedly, we the people own the airwaves. But somehow, not only have the owners forgotten that, but sometimes we have forgotten too. They have to be licensed. And there's a lot of licensing things that they have to do to comply and to keep their licenses. There's a woman named Sue Wilson who is suing, actually, two radio stations in Milwaukee.
WISM and WTMJ.
We'll be curious to see how those lawsuits go. But what people can become active in trying to help keep local radio on the air by calling up the station managers, by sending emails to the owners, by putting some pressure to let people know that we don't really care about Arbitron ratings. We want good programming, and we want good progressive programming in progressive Madison.
Well, in local programming.
Yeah. I'm going to try to give about 45 seconds to your radio professionals here as we close out the hour. But Glenn, I just wanted to, again, punctuate something. I think it's the essence of what you're saying. This isn't inevitable. There are ways, I think, to change the philosophy and make it more local, make it more emphasized on spoken word, take advantage of new technologies that let people listen on demand. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and there are companies that are doing it. There are good local broadcasters that are still out there. One of my clients in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They do it old school, and they make lots of money. It is not impossible to do it that way, but you have to be committed, and you have to have skill, and you have to have the right management and the right people in place to be able to do something like that. And there are other options out there as well, as we talked about, podcasting, the web. There's lots of ways to deliver audio programming right now, and that could be an option for somebody like Sly, too. But silencing those voices is very dangerous for the community generally. And I can think of instance after instance, not just the issue with Mayor Bauman at the time, but there were many. And if those battles didn't get fought, and if there's no one to fight them, then everybody loses. It's not just a financial thing, but the community generally loses. Everyone loses.
Amy, any other thoughts?
Well, I just, what makes me very sad is that now there's really no place that was doing news like we did the news. We were all so committed, and even the new website that we worked so hard on, taken down, and that was really hard, and I hope that some station picks up where we left off.
Tina?
Wow. I guess I go back to what Amy was saying, that I really think that... that they kind of just gave up on us, and they're kind of taking the easy route, which I understand. I certainly understand. I do understand from a business perspective. I honestly do. I guess my hope would be, because this was my problem with WTDY, there's a diverse community out there. There's black and brown and yellow. There are lots of people of color take up a big majority of this city, and I do not think that we were programming to that And I think that is certainly needed in Madison.
With about 20 seconds, Dylan.
Well, thank you, John, and it's so good to see Amy and Dina again. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Glenn, a great boss in a world full of horrible bosses. And I'm not going anywhere.
All right. Hey, our thanks to Glenn for joining us on the phone from out east, and Dylan and Dina and Amy and Mike and Barbara.
And thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
It,
it's an ongoing discussion. If folks want to get in touch with that, some sort of bigger picture ideas, we'll try to hook all these folks together and other folks working on media reform. Write to me at MadisonJohnQ, MadisonJohnQ@gmail.com. This has been a public affair. Thank you, everybody, for just a fascinating hour of radio. We'll try to do this again sometime.
Thank you, John.
All right. Have a good week, everyone. The big sound from underground.